Once forged in the fires of PR and journalism, Curtis Dewar and Corey Westbrook united to create C Squared. Then I jumped on the bandwagon. I'm your host, Aaliyah, and this is Heavy Business, a podcast where we talk to music industry professionals and musicians and learn together about the music industry, marketing, and other tools that can help you promote the music you put so much effort into creating. Hello and welcome. This is Heavy Business. I'm Aaliyah.
And I'm Curtis.
And today we are here with Linz and Johnny from the UK alt pop trio Exploring Birdsong. How are you guys doing today?
Great. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I know the time difference is it's hard to make schedules work, but we did it.
Well, yeah. Thank you for getting up in the morning to talk to us.
Well, of course, I've got my coffee. I'm good. To start things off, would you give our listeners I gave a genre, but could you give an actual description of what your music sounds like for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. So our music is sort of piano-based alternative pop rock. We're very heavily influenced by a lot of metal, a lot of prog rock, new and old, lots of pop music, a lot of very different genres, but yeah. But it works, I think. I hope.
I think so too.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I like that it's got like a little melancholy vibe still, which I love. So yeah, I think it's really, really, you guys got something special going on.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
So maybe give us a little intro to how the band started and how you got to where you're at now.
Well, it started, I think maybe Linz, you take the first part of this and I'll join in halfway through.
Band. Sure. Yes, that's true. Spoiler alert. the first iteration of the band was born in 2015. So that was when we first arrived at our university, which was the Liverpool Institute for Performing Arts. We met there. We were all in the same class. And in the first week of university, I think all three of us were sort of struggling to find where we fit in. It seemed like everybody else was sort of finding their feet a little quicker than what we were. But we didn't realize that all three of us were in the same situation because we were not speaking to each other or friends at the time. So, the first week of university passed and I was leaving a class wearing a Genesis t-shirt, and our drummer, Matt, noticed me and in my Genesis t-shirt and messaged me later on that day saying, "I'm so sorry, this is very weird. Were you wearing a Genesis t-shirt earlier?" And I said, "Oops, yes." And then we talked about music. We have a lot of music in common. We decided that we should get into a practice room and see if we could write some music together. At the time, the room that we were in only had a drum kit in it and an upright piano, which was lucky because that was our instrument. The sound of Exploring Birdsong was really formed that day in 2015. And then Johnny joined later on. We became friends by then, and we knew that we wanted Johnny to be part of it again. We have all the same music in common. Very weird and bizarre that we didn't make friends straight away, but we got there in the end. Johnny joined later. We asked him to join the first time and he said no. And then he's never living that down. Time a little more time passed, and we had the first initial rehearsal with Johnny. And go on, Johnny, what did you think?
Well, these guys played me, what they'd come up with at that point, and it was, very like Lynn said, piano-led prog. So I just come in, and I was playing in a couple of like pop bands and a couple of other things in the year, and I was just like, whoa, because this was obviously like much more complex than a lot of that other stuff. And at that point, I said no because I just didn't really have time. So Matt and Lynn's stayed friends with me despite me rejecting them in
Well, that's
advance.
kind of them.
Yeah, and then asked me again a year later, and I said no again, but then eventually came around. And from there, yeah, it's just been really nice that I think all of the songs came together quite naturally. And like Lynn said, the essential sound of Birdsong being piano and drums and vocals, with the addition of me on bass, it just came from, what we could all bring straight away to the band, and it's stayed that way ever since.
Yeah, that's awesome. Curtis, I saw Curtis mouse.
I was nodding along, just
Yeah,
listening on
yes.
that. I wanted to go into the business end of things, unless you still wanted to go to the songwriting part of it, Aaliyah.
Songwriting later if you want.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about how you guys went from, forming to getting signed to an imprint of Napalm Records, which is a pretty big label. So if you guys can kind of go over that, please.
Yeah, sure. So we were really we've been lucky to have a lot of support from Hold Tight PR. Matt Benton, shout out to you, what a little superstar.
We love him.
Yes. He's always championed the band from when we were, we're still a baby band, but when we were like an embryo band. He's always been there, and I think thanks to him and getting us out and about to people that he could get us to, we eventually caught the attention of Long Branch, and it's been a very, very happy relationship so far. I mean, we couldn't have asked really for a more understanding, a more like passionate label for our music. We were lucky to meet with our label manager and a couple of other people from the label at the last Euroblast festival. So Manuel, hello, and everybody, hello. It was completely fabulous, I have to say, because we have spent so much time talking on emails, and I think we've had maybe like one or two calls. It really is a really happy relationship, and we're so proud to be with Long Branch and associated with Long Branch, because they've got so many great artists. I mean, like for one thing, it was like such a trip for us to be on the same label as Agent Fresco, when we for so long have cited Fresco as a major influence for our sound. So getting to kind of live in the same area as them is like a crazy, it's still a bit of a pinch me scenario. No, it was we feel very lucky actually, and Long Branch, as I say, all the way have held our hand through COVID, and been very understanding of the whole situation and delays that have come about since then. But yeah, no, they've been great, and long may it continue. I hope that we don't do anything to turn them off.
Hopefully. So you said it was mainly due to Matt from Hold Tight championing you guys for you getting signed. So how did you guys kind of start getting on his radar type of thing?
I think
Oh,
it was Matt, our drummer, actually. It was always very good with like the business side of this sort of thing. I mean, he we did a few gigs quite early on while we were still at uni that were supporting bands that we knew of and really liked and loved to be sort of associated with. Like we had a great gig supporting Ver with Annika von Giersbergen, and after the first date they asked us, do we want to come and support them the day after as well? You know, so we were like, oh, yeah, great. You know, of course.
Yeah.
And yeah, a lot of that came from just sort of emailing people our demos and, you know, saying, yeah, this is the music that we're creating. You know, at that stage, we were in the midst of recording the first EP, and just people were really, you know, lovely and excited about it. And yeah, we managed to get into a lot of doors that we didn't expect to at that stage. So I think with those first few gigs supporting bands who were sort of on our radar, but we didn't think of within the same circle as us, you know, we then got to know other people from other stages of the industry. And and Matt from Hold Tight was a PR company that we'd sort of had our eye on, and there was just immediate chemistry once conversation started. And all the way through, you know, even now, like we absolutely love the whole team over at Hold Tight, and they've, like Lynn says, they've been championing us ever since. And I think it came from quite a nice natural place of just doing occasional shows and getting to know people and doing some research into who we wanted to work with, because, you know, we'd had this idea of, you know, we want to be working with people who we feel understand us and understand, you know, what we're trying to do with this whole project and everything. So for it to be quite easily found that we're in a space with, you know, a label and a PR company and all this, that who really just understand us and get on with us really well, you know, it's such a nice feeling. So yeah, something like that.
So question, just to back it up on the business end of things here, so do you think getting the Hold Tight PR connection, like getting the PR first, helped you to get the label deal, or do you think it, like, kind of explain the process on that for listeners?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So off the back of all the hard work from PR, we got into Prog Magazine, which was the first major milestone for us, having read it and not having, like, you know, it was a total again, we've been lucky enough to have several pinch me moments so far.
That was actually part of a 5-year plan that we wrote down.
And you got it like the first year.
Yeah, we're within about 6 months of writing that, we featured, which was so nice.
So yeah, go on. It was,
write down your plans and goals, people.
Yeah, exactly. Manifest it.
But yeah, so off the back of that, and you know, we managed to catch the attention of the label, and yeah, thank goodness. And yeah, Matt and Hannah at Hold Tight, they have been very, very good to us. So, you know, hopefully, again, long may it continue. They've been a really significant part of our journey. And that came from, I think, to be honest, the majority of our opportunities have come from sending an email and not expecting to get an answer. You know, similar to we supported Sleep Token on their first UK headline tour. I believe it was the first
that's UK headline. Big.
Yeah,
but that whole thing came from sending an email and not expecting an answer. So we've been fortunate so far. But,
let me piggyback off that just for 1 second. How does one get the guts to do that? Most bands don't have that. So curious how you had the guts to go out and just reach out to people that
sorry, go on, Lindsay, you can go.
No, I was just about to say, unfortunately, because he is absent from this, it is Matt Harrison, our drummer.
Emailer extraordinaire.
he just gets anybody.
Yes,
we'll have to have him on to talk about crafting an email.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I think I was going to say that you know, we had looked into the industry as, you know, like such a supportive atmosphere, and you know all of us had experiences within there somewhere, but especially within, you know, the prog scene, the rock scene, the metal scene, you know, people are so supportive, and there's so many friendly faces within there, despite what you might think of this music industry as some massive thing. Yep. So I think it came from a sort of knowledge of, you know, most people are nice, and a belief in what we were doing and what we wanted to do with the music, as well as just acceptance that we probably won't get a response. So if we do, it's great.
Yep. So let's just talk quickly about getting signed then. Were either of you involved with that actual process before I asked?
I think we all were involved within calls with Long Branch. And I mean, once that initial contact was made, you know, they were very keen to, you know, talk to us as a band rather than just having like a representative or anything.
Cool. Just wanted to make sure before I got into anything and wasn't digging into anything that you couldn't talk about. So can you guys kind of go over the process of like, were you guys shopping for labels, or was it just them that you were talking to, that type of thing? Like, kind of go through the process of how you got signed with them?
Yeah, so it was just Long Branch really that we were in serious talks with.
Sure.
Having so many bands on the roster that we were really familiar with, Fresco in particular, mm-hmm. It was a huge drawing point for us. And we knew that we didn't want to. So we had the first EP in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
For quite a while, but we didn't want to release it without a label. So because we believed in and still do believe in the music, and we wanted to get it out as far as what we could possibly get it at that point in time. And Long Branch definitely helped facilitate the kind of reach that it did get and is still getting. So that's very nice. We knew really from the initial conversations that we really did want to entertain a relationship with Long Branch. And obviously we were, I believe, maybe we weren't quite, maybe we just turned 20, 21, but we mm-hmm. were young and still are, you know, it's just to say, but we were younger then. It was our first record contract that we'd ever seen. So we knew how to be smart about it though. So we knew to get advice from people who knew better. We knew to go to the Musicians Union. We knew how to not be dumb. So we ended up with a very happy situation really, which I believe is fair to say that not a lot of bands are in for their first deal. It's usually a bit of there's a rub somewhere. I don't think our situation is that situation at all. It's been a very happy scenario for everyone really. Despite it being our first signing, I think we played the game the right way. We've definitely learned things along the way since, but it definitely wasn't a bad, definitely not a bad start.
And I think, I don't know if you guys actually had any negotiating points on your contract, but I think a lot of musicians don't realize that when you're offered a contract, you can negotiate things, you know, some things at least. So,
We definitely did.
Again,
off the back of advice of people who were experienced and that we trusted, and it's paid dividends. So again, like, if you have an idea of where you believe your music is headed and where you believe that you can go, you're well within your right to express that to somebody who is actually there to try and facilitate that. I do think a lot of people sort of rely on the label to tell you where you're going, but it's smart for you to already know that, you know.
Yeah, and also I was just going to say it was really nice as well, like Lynn says, I think at this stage we were just about to leave uni, so we were all about 21. Mm-hmm. And I remember us having the first call with Manuel from Long Branch, and it was, I think, something that we were, you know, hesitant of, or, you know, really wanting to look out for, was that kind of mutual respect, especially with us being such a young band. You know, because it could have very easily been the type of relationship where you feel like you could get taken advantage of almost, you know, as sort of inexperienced and new to all this and that sort of thing. And yeah, from the first Zoom call that we had with Manuel, you know, there was just like, there was that respect there, and there was definitely a feeling of, you know, these guys sort of understand what we're trying to do, and they're not trying to, you know, take us for a ride or anything. So yeah, I think a lot of that sort of standing your ground, but that gut feeling of, you know, if you have a talk with someone, you know, are they listening to you? Are they wanting to, you know, really help you out with what you're doing? And yeah, we felt that with Long Branch for a long time. So yeah, we're very lucky.
That's awesome. And then I have one more question, but I guess before we go into the songwriting, because I know we're running out of time. So show opportunities, has being on a label helped that, do you think, or didn't really affect anything? Because you mentioned Sleep Token, but it sounded like that was before the label. So just curious here.
Yeah, I believe so. We have definitely, it definitely doesn't help. Doesn't help.
Wait.
No, it definitely doesn't hurt. I mean, we were definitely able to form relationships with booking agents off the back of saying we're assigned bands with a trajectory. Obviously this was pre-COVID, so you know, it helped in terms of forming the relationships with people who could then book the shows. I would definitely say that it's not hurtful to be signed and try and get shows, but I would say though it's not an essential part of it, because I do think it's fair to say that before we were signed we were playing decent shows. You know,
sounds
so yeah we were. So I think, you know, that's a nice it's hard because, you know, we obviously believe in our sound and our music so much, but you know, at the same time it is a nice form of validation when you aren't, you know, super represented and you're not like absolutely at the forefront of a massive roster of artists, but that people still take a chance because they also believe in the music. And I think that's how we were fortunate really with the shows that we did play before we had any sort of representation at all. But again, it all sort of, they're all cogs in the machine of getting, you know, slowly but surely further the way up, and you play the shows and you get the attention of labels and you get the attention of more industry, and people want to jump on and people want to be part of it. So it's a nice it's a very nice feeling when you think back to how the band formed and how where we came from and where we started. And as Johnny said, you know, we do what we do because it's a fun way for us to spend time together, and it's a fun way for us to have our creative output. So when people really see something serious in its future, that's a very exciting prospect for us, because obviously we see it too. So
cool. Aaliyah, I guess we should talk about the songwriting since we're running out of time, eh?
Well, I wanted to ask, are all of these things skills that you kind of learned while at LIPA? I wanted to ask a little bit about what that study looked like. I mean, you guys went into a performing arts school for college, so you knew going into college that this is what you wanted to do for your careers. So what did it look like?
Yeah, I think it was quite varied really, because we all turned up, and you know, I think like Linz was mentioning, we felt like we weren't quite sure of where we fit within the sort of music world at that point. And going to uni, you know, some people turn up and they know exactly what they want to do. You know, they've got themselves as an established artist and they've already got those connections out there and all this sort of thing. I mean, I went to uni and I didn't know whether I wanted to do original music or session playing or anything like that, you know, so it really can vary. And I think the thing that was good about it was it just forces you to go out there and do things, you know, because I think that was part of the challenge actually, of, you know, not seeing the music industry as this thing that's impossible to get into, and actually just seeing it as, you know, so many people are involved with it and they are just people. And You know, there's so many good stories, as much as there are stories of people getting hurt by contracts or, you know, not nice people within the industry. So, yeah, I think there were, you know, lectures and things about the way you would structure a tour and, you know, all this sort of thing, the way, you know, contract negotiation was something that did come up, using what you are as an artist as a way to get more things, you know, like we talk about, you know, once you're on the label, well, that makes it easier to get shows. And then when you're on those shows, well, then more people see you and that helps you with that, you know, that sort of snowball effect. Well, you know, being able to use your reputation as, you know, part of your card, you know, as a band, is really helpful. So yeah, there were a lot of things like that. And a lot of it also was just sort of trial and error, you know, like I say, just the emailing people and seeing what can come from it. And, you know, as much as we got emails that led to actual business relationships, we also got emails saying, you know, thanks, but it's not what we're looking for or whatever. But even a lot of them, you know, it was good to get a response sometimes. And also it was just good for people to be upfront and honest and say, not right now, but keep doing what you're doing. So yeah, there were things that were helpful to learn about once you were there, but also a lot of it is just sort of finding your feet yourself, you know.
Yeah, and it gave you a place to do that in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to ask about your songwriting session with Paul McCartney, of course. Ever the Optimist. How much of that was written before you went into the songwriting session, and what did that songwriting session, how much did it affect the end result?
So we had the chorus remains the same today as it
was. Love the chorus, it's great.
Thank you. Yeah, that had existed before we took the song into the session. And the verses were, the melody was there, and the bare bones of it were there, but we hadn't, there were no words, it was very, very loose. And so yeah, we took the first verse and chorus into the songwriting session with Paul McCartney. Sir Paul, excuse me.
sorry, my bad too.
Sorry to that man. But yes, yeah, so it was very bare bones, and we took it into him. I kept having like several sort of very small out of body experiences, because I was sat at the piano playing and singing this song, and he was like there, like sat next to me on the piano stool, like over my shoulder, and I was,
that had to be wild.
Right,
it surreal.
Yeah, it was. I've had dreams that have been more surreal but felt more realistic than how that felt. Very weird. But yeah, no, he was he seemed into it, and so we have a sheet of paper. It's I hate to, in his absence, we're bringing him up a lot, but this sheet of paper lives at Matt's house with and I'm absolutely furious because I want to see it again. the sheet of paper that is, we typed out what we had of the song that existed at that point so we could take it in. And it has Paul McCartney's handwriting on it, and he wrote down, you know, what he thinks we should do in the pre-chorus, and, you know, what we should do, where we should take it in the mood of the song. And we weren't expecting anything like that. So just for a bit of background, we had we received an email ahead of being told that a few of the songwriting students had secured the opportunity to have the session with him. So then subsequently we received an email with, like, here are some ground rules, okay? So, like, you can't, you know, don't do this, and this. So which was so fair. It was stuff like,
yeah definitely
healthy, like don't be weird, you know what I mean, like don't waste man's time. Like it's so fair. But one of these things was, do not ask him to sign anything, like don't ask him, please don't do that. So we did not expect him to get whip a pen out and start writing, you know what I mean, like it was bizarre. But yeah, no, it was completely incredible. And Johnny and I are massive Beatles fans and have been since childhood. So
why does Matt have the lyrics?
I know.
Is he the only non-Beatles fan in the group and he gets it?
Yes, I know.
No.
No way.
I know. But
does he at least like Wings or what?
I think he is a fan and he likes what it is. But I mean, we've talked before how Linz and I grew up through the music of our parents. You know, for me, it was when up until I was about 10, the only music I ever heard was stuff that my dad would play. So that was, you know, Beatles, Beach Boys, Queen, Pink Floyd, all this sort of stuff. And I think it's a similar sort of story for Linz. So yeah, I don't know how Matt's ended up with the Paul McCartney merch.
That's amazing. I had a quick follow-up on that. So just was there, unless I missed this and you said it, I don't think so, was there anything you said you guys were picked to do the songwriting with him. So how did that kind of happen? I don't think you said how you got picked, unless you don't know.
It doesn't sound like you were told about a competition ahead of time or anything. It was just kind of dropped
did I
on
miss
you.
Did I miss that or did you
no,
say
no,
that?
No. Okay. So what happened was, so throughout university you have the option of you can choose to go into songwriting or you can choose composition. So Johnny chose composition. And Matt and I had established a separate songwriting partnership to Birdsong. We established that during our time at university to write pop music and to write music to give to other people, essentially. So that was the kind of music that we were turning in for our grades, essentially. So it wasn't Birdsong music at all that we were getting marked on, not until our third year. So it was our third year that we were made aware ahead of even sort of getting a place at university that it was an opportunity on the horizon, that if you chose to go into songwriting, yeah, you could be one of the people that were, you see what I mean? So it wasn't a guarantee, never a guarantee. But it was sort of in the ether as a thing that could happen. So we thought oh, well, you know, someone's got to be chosen. So, you know, it might be us, but chances are it won't be. And especially me, I was thinking oh, it's not going to be me because I would really love it and it would be the best experience of my life. So it's not going to happen, is it?
Don't get your hopes up, right?
Yes, exactly. But lo and behold, it did. And it was myself and Matt and maybe 8 or 9 other people from our year that also chose to do songwriting. So I wish I could tell you what it was based on. but I have no idea, but we were doing something right, so
fair enough.
I'm not sure we've mentioned it yet as well, but with Lippo itself, you know, it was kind of set up by Paul in conjunction with a lot of the local sort of people and everything, because he, you know, is so passionate about Liverpool music and music in general and everything. So you know, it's such a nice thing that he's sort of put his own sort of name and, you know, money into establishing this place for sort of carrying on that kind of tradition of music coming from there. So yeah, he's very sort of involved on that level from it.
Yeah, it was very bizarre walking around. So the building, the original building, is the Institute for Boys that Paul and George attended when they were kids.
Oh,
yes,
cool.
So like you're walking around and you know that you're walking around in these classrooms and you know your boots are hitting the same floor that theirs did many years prior. So yeah, it's
and the next building on is the Arts College, isn't it, as well, where John went as well. So yeah, it's within the blood of the place, you know.
That's awesome. I have one more quick question. I know we got to wrap up really quickly here. How do you kind of parlay something like working with Paul McCartney or having him critique your song rather into future things, I guess is what I want to say, without it being cheesy or anything like that? How do you work that out?
Gosh, I mean, there's Yeah, there's two angles. There's two yeah. angles, really. It's a good question. But obviously, you've got the very practical, pragmatic side of it, where it's like, oh, we have to tell people, like we have to
you
use
can't
it.
Not.
Like, yeah. Exactly. Like we knew straight away, like we have to take a Birdsong track. Yes, our whole songwriting module up until this point has had zero to do with the band whatsoever. But we would be so dumb not to take a Birdsong track, even if it's just for Paul McCartney hearing it and deciding he hates it. At least he said. So yeah, there's that. But also, yeah,
that would have been so weird, though.
I still yeah. can't believe, but no, it was a definite, like, this is a PR angle for sure, and we needed to be smart and use it, and it didn't hurt also that the way that the song developed and progressed as a result of that session, it did turn into a song that we thought, like, oh, this is like real first single back material, and you know, it did hit hard, and you know, that is as a result of using this experience as a thing to draw people into it and think, like, oh, well, if this is a song that Paul McCartney has had a hand in, even if it's in just the tiniest way, you know, then, you know, we knew for sure that we had to. But also, you know, having somebody like that sat next to you listening to a song that you're writing, you are looking at somebody who is, you know, one of the most influential musicians of the 20th century, and you know, you're not going to experience that every day. We will never experience it ever again. So you know, this is a man who, in the city that we were in at the time, he's immortalized in statues, and you know, like they're everywhere. You can't move
multiple.
So you know, I will never have that sort of experience again, but it definitely does color, I think, how I have written songs since. You know, everybody who is a Beatles fan has heard the stories of, like, oh, well, we write nonsense lyrics and then we write the real ones later, and you know, all the things that you've ever heard him say in interviews. He does operate that way. It is true. So he said to us in the session, he was like, just fill the syllables, just write anything, so that you can form, you know, the melodies, and it sits right, and you'll get there. He does do it, so, and it does work, kind of. So, you know, if it works for him, go for it.
Wow. Well, there right there is a songwriting tip. But do you have any other songwriting tips or other tips for musicians that you took away from Lipa that you could share today?
We'll go on. Well, I think Johnny had better take this one, because despite the fact that he did not do songwriting, he got a spectacular result in his competition. And it is, one to this day, one of the most amazing things I've ever heard. So go on, Johnny.
Thanks, Mom. yeah, I mean, I think something that's really nice with this project in particular is the fact that, like, we've always felt we can all just bring something to the table, and we work really, really well together in a space of, you know, when someone brings something, we say, you know, oh, well, what can we do with that? And what can we do with this? You know, there's never, I can't think of as ever bringing anything in and it just being an outright, no, we can't use that, you know? So, I mean, I'd say for one songwriting tip, whether it's just you by yourself or you within a group, just trying things out and seeing where they lead. You know, it sounds cheesy and like it's not actually that helpful, but so many of our songs have originated from that exact experience of just, you know, let's just give something a go, and oh, well, actually that's quite nice. And you know, bringing that creativity through where, like, you're in a safe space where you can write something and it doesn't matter whether it's terrible or not. You know, most of the time that's how something, you know, that you can be really, really proud of can come through. Really, you know, and like a lot of these songs came from just sitting down bored on your instrument, whether it was a piano or like a couple of them on bass for me, or you know, even starting from like a drum beat or a certain type of fill or something. You know, we've had that with a lot of different songs, and with this new EP especially, there's a lot more emphasis on like synthesizers and additional instruments and this sort of thing. So sometimes taking yourself out of your comfort zone as well can really generate a lot of creativity. I think there's a phrase of boundaries sort of fuel creativity, in terms of if you put yourself on an instrument that you don't know that much about, sometimes you're playing with more of a kind of initiative, or you know, just using your ears more than using what you're used to playing, you know. So I think I've said like 3 or 4.
That's quite a lot. Thank you. Last thing, I just want you to share what is coming up for Exploring Birdsong and just pimp it out.
Yeah, so we cannot, I mean, the immediate future is that our EP, Dancing in the Face of Danger, is dropping on the 24th of March. So we have, it's been a long time coming, and we're so, so proud of it. So we can't wait for it to give it, really. We can't wait to give it. but yeah, so that's the next thing on the agenda. And we are very, very excited to be part of the lineup for Radar Festival here in the UK in July. I don't know if you've seen the lineup, but if you haven't, oh my gosh, feast your eyes. The lineup is wild. So we're very fortunate to be a part of it. But yeah, we are going to be writing again together very soon for the next lot of material, and hopefully playing lots of shows. So there are things that we are organizing, things that are cooking away, and hopefully they'll be ready to come out the oven very soon.
Excellent. Well, what a pleasure, guys. Thank you again for making time to come on the podcast today. This was great.
Thank you for inviting us.
And everyone listening, you better have learned something this time. Until next time, make like a bull and throw those horns up.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please help spread the word by following or subscribing to us, recommending it to your friends, or leaving us a review on your platform of choice. Thank you for listening to Heavy Business, brought to you by C-Squared Music.